Hello and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Well, it's been a week where there's been one consistent topic for discussion for those of faith and none. That's the speech by former President Mary McAleese in Rome and her subsequent interview on Today with Sean O'Rourke. Liveline here on RT Radio 1 captured both sides in the debate, those for and those against her comments.
I'm appalled at this, to be honest, Joe. I think she's gone too far, really. She's thrown a right old strop, isn't she? Do you know, I'm an active member of the church. I'm a woman. I've been in the church all my life. I have never found myself to be in a situation where I felt I was in an empire of misogyny. What is it? An empire of misogyny.
Maybe Mary McAleese was angry and it came out in her words, but she expressed herself brilliantly. Why shouldn't she be angry if she was being silenced? She wasn't being included. And why shouldn't half the population, the women, all women, not be angry because they're being silenced and excluded by a church? And some of these women love the church, like Mary McAleese seems to. They want to be involved in the church. They love Christ and they want to see a future for the church.
In the press, Archbishop Dermot Martin described the comments of Mrs. McAleese as the Catholic Church is an empire of misogyny as a brutal, stark challenge to internal church culture. While this week's edition of the Irish Catholic newspaper suggests that she upset a few apple carts with her attack on the Catholic Church's attitude to women, stating that, in a sense, she's the gift that keeps giving to anti-Catholic elements in the media. Well, to discuss this further, joining us on the phone from Mayo tonight is Professor Siobhan Garrigan, Loyola Chair of Theology and Head of School, Religions, Peace Studies and Theology. And in the studio, Dr. Mary McCaughey, theologian and academic executive of the Priory Institute. You're both very welcome to The Leap of Faith. Let's start there, Mary. Was Mary McAleese attacking or challenging the Catholic Church?
I suppose I've listened to the whole address and not just those snippets where she uses the very strong wording. And I suppose I was expecting something actually a lot starker or stronger. But when I heard the address itself, I mean, I definitely think she has a point, and it is important to continually challenge the church as she is doing, but also, like, particularly on this issue. I mean, I know in her interview on Sean O'Rourke, for example, that she accepted the church's teaching on ordination and that women can't be priests, and she said that she didn't want to go down that route of discussion in her address. So what she's focusing on, from her own words, is just women's role in decision making in the Catholic Church. And I think it's important that the church continually challenges herself to ask, how involved are women in the decision making process of the church at all levels? So at higher levels, but also, you know, at parish level. And they are involved, but that the church continually reflects on to what extent they're involved and can this be increased, for example.
Professor Siobhan Garrigan joins us on the line from Mayo this evening. Siobhan, a challenge or an attack by Mary McAleese?
Well, definitely a challenge, and good on her, and good on Dermot Martin for seeing that that's what it was. As for it being brutal or stark, I mean, what man or man's club likes to be told they're misogynist? You know, to use that word is always going to be perceived as being somehow stark or out there. But he didn't say she was inaccurate, and I would say she was very accurate in using the word misogyny, and that, of course, it's challenging. I don't think it was an attack. I think, like Mary, in the context of the address, in which she used that phrase, we see an incredibly moderate weighing of various issues. We see a real passion for reform and review. We see somebody who has taken the church very seriously and very lovingly in her life. And I just think it's typical of our own wider misogynistic culture that when a man gives her an address like that, with all that care and legal and technical analysis and suggestion, he's called a reformer. And when a woman does it, she's accused of attacking and feeding into anti-Catholic camps. I think that's a product of, as I say, a wider misogyny, but also a zero-sum game when it comes to the church and how it is portrayed in the media. That was a remark in the Irish Catholic, which says you're either in or you're out. You're either completely for it or else you're playing into the anti-Catholic lobby.
It's a very interesting question. And it's interesting what Siobhan says, that the reaction by those who say it's extreme, you know, that is this a misogynistic attitude or comment? You know, women experience various degrees of perhaps exclusion in society, not just the church, various forms of prejudice, they're at the receiving ends of various expressions of power where they feel excluded or whatever. So it's very hard to sort of pinpoint.
I think that misogyny affects us all. It's like racism or sectarianism. It's at our, it's so deep within us.
Mary?
Yeah, so is it ingrained? Is it deep in our psyche? Is it something which we operate out of, and therefore some women would want to distance themselves from her comments? You know, I suppose people want to uphold the ideal of the church as, you know, rather than look at the idea of the church where everyone is partaking and everyone is baptized and everyone fully plays their part. And so sometimes to look at the more negative side of things is, you know, we don't like it. We don't like to hold a mirror up to ourselves, and we don't want to hurt anybody or offend anybody, particularly those perhaps who are in the hierarchy or whatever in the institution. But this continual process of self-reflection is important, because ultimately, you know, unless we do this continual self-examination, if you like, as regards these sort of forms of power and exclusion, well, then we can't grow in our baptismal call, which is to fullness of life in Christ and to fullness of participation in the church where we live out of that. It's important that, you know, that we put these issues on the table. And, you know, is there a form of hatred of women or exclusion or based on power structures? Well, obviously, in a sense, we can't say the institution does it. It's always people within the institution. And some of us, we may have experienced it, you know, through certain people. As a woman in the church, as someone who is, like yourself, Siobhan, you know, someone who is teaching and involved in the church, involved in committees and different things, I'm not sure that I've experienced it in a way that I can name as misogyny. But I've certainly experienced, you know, power structures and I'd have to sort of reflect on it. But I think ultimately the point is that this has been put on the table, and it's something that we have to reflect.
Actually, can I come in there, Michael? The points Mary raises, I would welcome, but I would want to disagree with slightly, probably because I've had different experiences. Mm. I have experienced both in my own life and my own private life, my own career, profound misogyny from people in the church. I've also experienced great friendship and grace from people in the church, but I can't turn a blind eye to the many instances of misogyny I've experienced. And I'm slightly uncomfortable talking about this on the radio, so let me just say two more objective things I've observed, or I should say rather than objective, two observed things. First of all, Mary McAleese, I didn't want to argue for women priests. She rather, as Mary rightly said earlier, wanted to say, well, okay, accepting that we can't have women priests, how are we going to involve these supposedly special, valuable people in the church? However, I would argue for women priests, because until we have women priests, we can't really counter the arguments of misogyny. Now, I know in those churches, non-Catholic churches, which have women priests, it doesn't wipe out misogyny, it doesn't wipe out gynophobia, it doesn't wipe out sexism, but it does put women directly in positions of leadership and sacramental ministry, which slowly, slowly change the picture. The experience of going up to communion and receiving it from a woman is for many people a profound one. It can be a rattling one, but it's a profound one. And then a second observation is just how in the church, it's not just structures, It's ideas. Misogyny is in our idea of the way God made the world. So men are perceived to be having authority, to be reliable, to be credible, to be trustworthy, and women are not. So it's not just sort of power in institutional forms, it's inherent ideas about God as creator, and God as male, and God as generative, that then trickle down into all these ideas of what men in the world are made to do and what women in the world are made to do, and don't have any transgender category, they just have those two categories. And those ideas percolate the floor of misogyny, regardless of whether we have women priests or not.
And Mary, you would hold a position that the women priests would not be an option in your theology. Mm-hmm. And do you believe you can still stay in that space, given the extra information, the extra enlightenment we've received over the last couple of years and possibly even centuries?
Mm-hmm. Well, I take Siobhan's point about leadership and, you know, that obviously, you know, priests are what most people would identify with, the leadership of the church, and bishops, the ordained, and somehow that women, by not partaking in that or not sharing that, are somehow not getting the chance to rightfully take their leadership role in the church. There is, of course, that seems like a reasonable, you know, argument. But I suppose I would agree with Mary McAleese on that point, that, you know, it's to focus on leadership, and that can women, and they do in parishes, parish councils, etc., you know, but can this be supported more and encouraged more? And, you know, on various the other levels in the church, in the Episcopal committees, etc. I suppose I subscribe to that, to the view of Christ being represented in the male, in the male, in a sense, and that choosing the apostles who were male, but that this, again, it's not to undermine the feminine aspect, which is the church. I mean, we talk of the church.
And, you know, if I could be slightly flippant for a moment about this, it's like suggesting that because the Wright brothers were men, there should be no women pilots.
I suppose it's when you go deeper, and especially within our culture today, and especially from, you know, the time of the 60s when women's liberation became a major issue. And obviously, you know, it seems like this is just the last bastion of women's inequality. I can totally see where people are coming from. But somehow, obviously doctrine develops, etc. I suppose this is how it's the categories of nuptiality, and you know, that the church represents the feminine in some sense, which represents the human being in relation to God, and that somehow that the priest is representing Christ there as the head, etc. So it's a nuptial relationship, which should be a relationship of mutuality between priest and people. You know, I know it is difficult to understand it using sort of just a sort of a more sociological approach, and obviously it shouldn't ever lead to a justification of women's oppression in the church or exclusion in the church.
Siobhan, the interesting comment that has been passed on a regular basis, if you look back at some of the interviews, was that if Mary McAleese wasn't happy, that she should leave her Catholic faith. That's an argument that's not standing, and she's certainly not accepting it.
No, nor should she. I mean, again, it goes back to what I said at the top, which is that a lot of ordinary Catholics, a lot of people in the Catholic hierarchy, and a lot of Catholic journalism portray church membership as an in or out thing. If you don't like it, lump it. That is a far more profound heresy, to my mind, than you know, graciously requesting that we consider how best to include women in leadership roles in the church, because by baptism, we're all members of the church. It's not a membership club. It's not a golf club where if you don't like the rules, then you're going to be expelled, or you should self-expel. We need everybody. Everybody who is willing to honour their baptism, there should be a place for them in the church, and we should give up this zero-sum game. The problems come, of course, on these big hitting issues like women's ordination, because then the question is, you know, if you baptize them, why won't you ordain them? The theologies of these sacraments are quite closely linked.
I'm talking this evening with Dr. Mary McCaughey and Professor Siobhan Garrigan. I can ask a question of both of you as professionals, theologians and academics about the idea that for people to have a conversation at this level and the level that has been operating at with, for example, Mary McAleese, people have to have a soundness in their identity, their faith, for the want of a better word, even an emotional maturity when it comes to debating. And if they don't, they become anxious, afraid and angry. Mary.
It's a very good point. It actually is really important that lay people in the church, I think, have a sense of the theology. Because without that use of the intellect, in a sense, what they pick up about their faith can be just often polemical, and it leads to fundamentalism, and it leads to the inability to dialogue and to debate and to listen and engage and reflect. Like Siobhan's point earlier about, you know, is there space in the church for a multiplicity of views? Yes, of course, because in a sense, revelation has been given to us by God, and the fullness is in Christ. But ultimately, as members of the church, we're there to receive it, to unpack it, to live it, and to try and understand it using our mind and you know, and to engage deeply. And you know, there's different expressions of that truth in how we receive it, but ultimately there should be a unity, and there will be, but it challenges the church, you know, because the church has to move forward and to engage with the culture, express revelation in terms of culture. So just the use of reason is extremely important, or we'll end up with fideism and fundamentalism.
Siobhan, have people become frightened by this discussion?
I don't know. I mean, most of my friends and neighbours and the people who I met in the session last night, and they're quite happy to talk about it. So maybe in some contexts, I think what strikes me in relation to what you say is the relative lack of theological education available to ordinary people who might want it. So in, you know, primary school, there's religious instruction, there's very little religious education, very little theological education in secondary school. And what's available at third level is often tied to teaching, and it's, you know, it's very good, but few people go for it, and it's tied to education. And I hope in the next decade we can see the growth of initiatives like Mary's and mine and other people to try to put more and better theological information and reflection into the hands of ordinary Irish lay people and ministers. Because if you do theology, you're always going to know there have always been, since apostolic times, nuances and varieties of opinion on certain things. And so the formation in how to talk comes in part with actually studying what theology actually is.
Mary?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so, so true. And, you know, it's a real privilege, absolute privilege for me to be involved in, you know, in that work of educating the laity. And in a sense, Mary McAleese, one of the things I slightly disagreed with was when she said that sort of formation and discernment is confined to the priesthood. And I suppose, again, as a colleague of mine said to me yesterday, you know, we have to check our privilege as women in the church who are involved in this work of formation and discernment. And, you know, it's just one of the greatest joys, really, that I have, that I'm involved in this work of educating the laity in the faith. And that it's a discussion among us, it's a reflection. Like, we unpack revelation, but we try to relate it to our lives, real life, culture, that the faith is not something, as I said, it's not fideistic, you know, that it's somehow, we believe, it challenges culture as a whole, it challenges the world as a whole to reflect on what it is to be human, fully human, what a good society, a just society is. You know, and to give lay people the tools to enter, to go back out into the culture, into the society, and to challenge that society in turn. It's just such a joy.
There is one slight difference here that might be worth picking up on, and that is that I'm not involved in church committees. I'm not involved in preparing people for the faith. So what I say largely comes from my familial and domestic and neighbourhood experience on the one hand, and then my experience as a scholar and an educator on the other. And so my remarks about theological education were in the context of the Loyola Institute, and my hope that institutes, our institute and others like it, can provide a space for lay theological education. Now, why is that distinction? Why did I want to take people's time listening to that? Because, to go back to your question about fear and anger and an oppositional hot reaction, if I understood your question right, I think that what we get in the university, in addition to people who are very comfortable in the church, we also get people who have been profoundly hurt by their experiences in church. And in saying what I said, I also need to honour that the anger and the hurt that is there is very real and very justified and very understandable. And it's on a range of issues, not just the ones that Mary McAleese hinted at. And universities can provide safer spaces in which people can return to asking questions about theology, because a lot of people have the good sense to, or the luck, or the grace, to be able to see that there is a kernel of something truly loving in the gospel and in certain parts of the witness of faith through the years, even though they themselves have been treated terribly.
Yeah, like, I totally take your point. And when I say I'm involved in sort of faith formation, it was more just to sort of make the point, distinct from Mary McAleese, that that women can have a role in that sort of leadership formative sphere. But I was agreeing with you in the sense of, I suppose my background would be theological formation, but it's not that I would sort of see that as just sort of faith in a vacuum, that it's still very much, whether it's at a university level or a parish level, it's still very much listening to people who are students in your class, who come with those experiences of even hurt, anger and exclusion if they're women, but just to be able to, as you say, to help them sort of shine the light of the gospel, to reinterpret their experiences. And another point she says about is that women sort of have no role in discernment. Discernment would be part of sort of theological education as well. It's how do we, you know, like, we're given theological truths, if you like, the truths of revelation or whatever, but how do we discern how they are applied in our lives, in society? And this, it is an engagement with the intellect. It's not just that we sort of don't listen to people who are students.
Mary, if I could ask you, you put forward a presence that you are very comfortable with the status quo as it is at the moment, that everything is okay. Do you actually personally get frustrated at any point with where you currently are as a woman in the Roman Catholic Church?
I have to say, okay, I get frustrated, and we're frustrated by individuals, you know, those who are above us, etc., in various jobs, and, you know, those I've worked with. Of course, I get frustrated. It's very hard for me to pinpoint someone who is relating to me and may exclude me or ignore me. It's very hard to pinpoint. Is that because of a hatred of women, or is it to do with the fact that I'm a lay person, or is it to do with the fact that I have certain theological views? So it's very hard. I mean, it's easy sometimes for me to say, like, I studied women's studies before I went and did theology. I did a master's in equality studies in UCD 20 years ago, and I was very, very interested in just women, and coming from, you know, my own life, obviously everyone's experienced the sense of being undermined as a woman, or of not being allowed to use all your gifts as a woman. And so from a young age, from a sort of a, you know, 20, I would say this became a huge issue for me, because I'm brought up in a very traditional household, you know, a strict division of labour, etc. But then it became more of a personal quest for how do I as a woman just become fully self-actualized, and how do I become aware in various spheres of my life, whether it's, you know, jobs or just community or wherever, or academia, just to be absolutely, to check whether I am fully using all my gifts and talents, and what obstacles I may encounter, and to never ever let any experience of my identity as a woman, or my identity of how I might perceive myself as receptive or passive in a traditional sense of being feminine, that I would never let that undermine my full self flourishing within the church. And I suppose that has remained with me, and that's been the path I've been following as I've moved into theology and into church, that I claim my full dignity as a woman made in the image and likeness of God.
A final question to both of you then this evening, if I could begin with you, Siobhan. Have things changed to the point they can't go back as a result of Mary McAleese's contribution to the discussion, Siobhan?
No, no, no. It's a storm in a teacup for every country other than Ireland. It's been very interesting to talk to friends and relations, Irish people living in England and the States and Germany in the last week, who are delighted that it made mention in the papers, but in a very, very small way, and certainly it wasn't a topic of conversation in their churches last weekend. I don't mean to say it didn't matter, or it won't be one of the many incrementals. Tina Beattie from Roehampton, she has been working on this issue for 25, 30 years. And I name her, but there are dozens of others. Mary McAleese was talking at a conference called Voices of Faith. Women who insist that although what their voice is saying may be different, or their voice, because it's a woman's voice, may not normally be welcome, they're going to use their voices, they're going to say this sort of thing. And that long-term, gritty, careful movement will make a difference in the end, I hope. But this one thing that Mary McAleese said has brought it to the attention of the Irish Church, but will only be a little incremental movement after the wider church.
Mary?
Yeah, and Mary McAleese herself said that, you know, she made the same comments back in 1995 and and that nothing has changed. Again, I just think, yeah, it is. It's just so important to listen to women's voices. That is this now something new? Are we moving into some new era? I don't think so, but I think that just the fact that she's raised it again, it just keeps it on the agenda. How do we just self-actualise the church?
Dr. Mary McCaughey and Professor Siobhan Garrigan, thank you both for joining us on The Leap of Faith.
You're welcome.
And that's our programme for this week. You can email the programme, faith@rte.ie. From all of us here tonight, good night.